to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Joe.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence, brought to you by the FNX Network, My Sportswear and the Offside Trust. I'm your host, Stel. And on this edition of Shoot the Defence, I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing former Sheffield United central defender and current head of recruitment for Everton's under-23s, Jamie Hoyland. Now, before you guys listen to this one, I'd just like to say this has probably been the most interesting and enjoyable interview I've done in a long, long time. Mark my words, you will love this show. Hello, Jamie.
All right.
Yeah, good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Brilliant, yes.
Fantastic. Look, we really appreciate you agreeing to come on the show. You know, I know it's quite late at night, so...
Don't be silly, but thank you very much for asking me. Pleasure to do it. No problem at all.
Great. Fantastic. Well, how are you doing anyway? Everything all right?
Yeah, good. Yeah, believe it or not, it's... Everybody said, oh, you'll be having a rest now. It's the busiest time. It's all the stuff you've been trying to do and get your targets. You're trying to get them sorted now. So it's a busy time at the moment without watching much football, really.
Wait, I'll tell you what, you must be watching that under-20 World Cup, though, no?
Well, believe it or not, Paul Simpson's my best mate. We started off together at Man City. He was 15, I was 16. We got put in digs together. And I've learned from him at Preston, but we probably speak to each other every day. I spoke to him straight after the match. Yeah, so I'm absolutely delighted for him. And obviously with a lot of Everton lads in the squad as well, it's brilliant. Yeah, really good.
Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an intriguing tournament so far, is it? Because, I mean, they beat Italy with ease today, didn't they?
Yeah.
I know they went behind early, but
I mean, I watched the one, was it the other day, when it was a bit like, who did he play last round? I'm trying to think now. And then they played today, and I mean, they could have been 4-0 beginning of second half. They just pinned them back, and they played superb. He made the right change, brought on Ojo, who got some pace going as an impact sub, and away they went. So no, I was really pleased with them today. Yeah. I thought they were superb. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it should be a good game because Venezuela aren't no pushovers, are they?
No, fuller athletes and got one or two individual players, so that will be interesting, yeah. But if anybody thinks that's a gimme, I don't think it is, because they've done brilliant to get to the World Cup final, so no, it's going to be a tough match, that, but I'm really good that they've got a team in a World Cup final, which is brilliant, yeah.
Exactly.
Great stuff.
Exactly, because, you know, you always see these old, you know, where are they now kind of thing, and, you know, 10 years
from
there.
It's brilliant to look at them. I've been looking at them a few this week, where the last lot got to the semi-finals, and I think it was 93 or 94, and you think, I played against some of them. Just shows you how old you are. Some went on to have great careers, and some actually frittered away out of game, which is amazing, really.
Yeah, it's scary how that happens. I mean, speaking to some former pros myself and seeing what they're doing now, a lot of them can't even get into coaching in the UK. It's shocking.
No.
It really is.
It's sad. It is sad now. I mean, I was lucky enough to coach about 17 years after I came out of it. But then I found it very, very hard, different mentality. Not so many ex-players in it, and a lot of lads, very young lads, getting involved in it who'd never had any experience, never had any coalface stuff. I'm not saying about playing, but even experience of coaching, and we're taking over. But if you look at the England setup now, there's a lot of ex-pros running the teams. There's a lot of lads there with not as much experience, but they're starting to get quite a few of the old pros backing around it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing, actually, because end of day, you've got to realise what goes on for 3 points on a Saturday and stuff like that, and playing to win. Yeah. And I think Paul mentioned that a few times today about the winning mentality. You know, it's all right having all this philosophy and what we do, but it's about winning. And that's what they've done, and they've done it great.
That's right. Good luck to them. So hopefully it won't go to their heads. They're still young.
Well, that's the big thing. I must admit, that's a massive thing, which we try and do at Everton. We have Dave Unsworth, obviously, with the under-23s, and Unsworth, you know, he works them hard. They all love him. He's got fantastic respect off the lads, but they have to work hard. And off the field as well, they have to, you know, apply themselves right around the training ground, when they're eating, when they're doing everything. It's a bit of pride in yourself, and they never, anybody, it's a funny old club for that, because it's a massive club, big club, but there's nobody with any egos whatsoever. Mm. And I think that comes from a lot of the staff. They don't let anybody get away with anything. And I think that's what some young lads get a lot of stuff now at a young age, and they think they've made it, and their agents are telling them this and that. And actually, they just need the coaches just to keep them in line, and they haven't done everything yet. And they need a few like role models around the place to do that. Tom Davies at our place is a perfect example. He could be on £1 million a week. It wouldn't bother Tom. Mm. He just loves playing football, and he's a great example for young players at our place.
Brilliant, fantastic. Right, so Jamie, whilst doing my research, I came across a few really good did-you-knows, so to speak. You kind of think that you'd hear in a pub quiz. The first one, which I'm sure many Sheffield United fans are already aware of, is your father, Tommy, played for the club for 12 years. Now, another interesting fact is John Beresford's dad actually took you and John to Man City as he was scouting there at the time. Now, I know Sheffield United is actually in your DNA, so is there any particular reason you didn't start your career there instead of Man City?
Wow, that's a fantastic bit of research as well. yeah, there is. The reason I didn't at the time is because my dad was a bit, well, he still is a legend. He's one of the oldest players still alive now. In fact, he's 85 next week. My dad, and I was always going to be son of Tommy, and I was never going to be my own person. There were people at that time would have still compared me against my dad. So I've been to Man City a few times with John's dad, you're right, and John himself, and it was a fantastic club. And so we just decided as a family, it would be probably best to start away from there, from Sheffield, from the on-time club, grow up a little bit, get away, and get cracking with it. As it is, when I even came back at 24, the first thing what people put on my pen bit in the programme was son of Tommy. Wow. So I never went away anyhow, but yeah, that was the reason. That was the reason I did it, to try and have a start away from, you know, always being in my dad's shadow, I suppose.
Mm. That's understandable. I mean, the thing is, you actually made your professional debut at 17, and you played a big part in the 84-85 promotion side. Now, unfortunately, you had an injury-riddled 3 years at City and was released aged 20. Now, did you think that was it for your career?
No. I mean, the funny thing is, that's correct, and I actually didn't know I was going to get released, and I went to see Billy McNeil with me new terms. I mean, I was on £80 a week then. I'd signed pro when I was 17, I was 20. £80 a week at Man City as a pro. And I went in wanting £100 a week, and I went into his office. I remember it as plain as anything now. I'm 51 now. I remember going into Main Road at the top office, not his office, sitting down, and I was just about to say, Billy, this is, and he went, you're released, we're releasing you. I've signed three more players.
Oh.
And to be fair, I could have knocked me over with a feather. And he went, thank you very much, but I'm signing Mark Lillis, Nigel Johnson, and I can't remember who the other one was. And I went, right. And he went, so I don't need you. And that was it. I was off at Leicester City. And obviously for a little bit, you're a bit raw. But then in my own psyche, I thought, right, I'm going to prove you wrong. I need to get back and show him that I can show, not him, but show people that, yeah, I can be a good footballer and play at a decent level.
That's right. And ironically, you got a trial with Norwich under Man City legend Mick Summerby.
Yes.
Was the club's geographical location the only reason you chose them over Bury?
Yeah, it was actually. I went to Norwich on trial, and it was a beautiful club, great people, great area. In fact, I'm going there on my holidays next week, Norfolk, I love it. But I just thought, wow, and I'd met a girl who I finished up marrying the time I asked you this, and I thought, this is going to be a long way, four or five hours. And suddenly Barry came in round the corner, and I thought, no, I'm going to try and build my career there.
Fantastic. So I think it was Martin Dobson, didn't he play central midfield?
Yeah, well, I went there, Martin rung me, and said, will you come and sign? Yeah, I signed, and it's the right way you go. And I finished up playing. No, I went as a centre forward and a centre half. And just into me, a little bit at Bury, Dobbo went to me, right, I'm going to make you a central midfield player. I can see you in me. Myself in you. And I'd never, ever, I was 21 then, ever played midfield in my life. And he said, you'd be fine. And obviously, for the first few matches, wow, what was I doing? And I got into it because I played centre half so I could get back and defend. But I started my career as a centre forward.
Right.
And I was never going to be a centre forward because I had no pace. But I could get into the box and time runs, and I weren't a bad finisher. And it was brilliant. I used to get out wide, both go out wide, I'd make the runs into the box. And I scored a few goals from midfield, and I loved playing midfield. Yeah, it was great.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, what would you say if I said the name Sammy McIlroy?
Oh, wow. I'd say, I mean, what a man to play with. He came to Bury, and we were all in awe. We had quite a lot of young lads. And Sammy walked in the dressing room, and we thought, oh my gosh, he's been at Man United. He's going to be. And he was the best person ever. He were coming on trial, Sammy, like. Wow. But what a player to play with. You just give Sam the ball, and you knew he'd keep it and give it in a better position. And he did more for young players at that club. Andy Hill, David Lee, Phil Parkinson, Liam Robinson, myself, who went on and I suppose did all right in the game. Mm-hmm. But playing with Sammy helped so much. He was brilliant. Brilliant as a person, brilliant as a footballer, and brilliant to help you and encourage you. Give you confidence all the time, and I must admit he was a great influence on my career, as was Martin Dobson.
See, this is the interesting thing, because a lot of time when you hear a top level professional like an Ibrahimovic signing for Manchester United, 36 years old, people think, oh, you know, he's only going there for the money. But a lot of people don't think outside the box and realise that. Yeah. He's been signed because you got youngsters there. So when you see someone like Sammy McIlroy, as you said, stepping into the dressing room, you guys must obviously been in awe of him. What did he give to you guys off the pitch? How did he help you guys grow as men?
Just how we talked about the game and how not and kept everything really simple, you know. And actually, it was about hard work. Sammy was probably one of the fittest people, still at 36, 37.
Wow.
And so you thought, well, if he's fit as that then, and by the way, Sammy loved a drink.
Right.
So he taught us a bit of that as well. But he did that at the right times. Mm. When he trained as if he was playing an FA Cup final every day, wanted to win everything he did. And just those things rubbed off on players who wanted to be footballers, really. Mm. I mean, I suppose you've mentioned Ibrahimovic at Man U. Another one when I was playing is Eric Cantona. When he came to Man United, they reckon he was unbelievable. Last one in, last one off the training field, first one on it. And the kids like Giggs, Beckham, all like that, just got things off him. And so, I know it's only Bury, but Sammy was a massive part in a lot of us, as some older players are when they go to clubs. They've had fantastic careers, but what they do is lift everybody else, and you use them as your role model, I suppose.
Mm. The thing is, nowadays we think, 36 years old, he's still old, but he can still play. But back then, those pitches were heavy.
Oh, well, pre-season used to be running around Eaton Park in Manchester and, you know, the long runs and all like that. And Sammy used to be up there. He used to be in the top three every time.
Wow.
So all that, and then, you know, there were a lot of games then, and there were no squad rotation then.
Yeah.
Because you had to play to get your appearance money.
Was it one sub? Was it one sub back then?
Yeah, one sub, one sub, I forgot about that, yeah. But Sammy wanted to play every single game and made sure he did, never missed anything, never shirked anything. So, yeah, and like you said, the pitches were not the best, but he played loads and loads of games for Bury.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, wow, what a pro.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, earlier you mentioned David Lee and Liam Robinson. I hear you formed a great relationship on the pitch with them. Are there any particular games you feel the three of you really clicked?
Probably. There was one where we went on a great run in what's the League Cup now, is it Capital Cup? I can't remember even what it was. Yes, it might be Littlewoods Cup. Yeah. It was Little, and we played QPR at Gig Lane, and they were actually top of the First Division, which is now the Premier League. They had an unbelievable side: Paul Parker, David Seaman, Fenwick, Les Ferdinand, loads of really, really good players. And that night we were superb, and Liam scored the winning goal. And it was just fantastic how, you know, David, he'd make a great, he'd make a really bad ball into a good one because of his pace. And Liam was a great finisher. So you could smack a ball down the line for David and look good and lay one through for Liam and he looked good and he scored the winner that night. And beating them that night, I think it gave quite a few of us in the team thinking, actually, we're not bad. You know, we've got a chance here with our careers if we can keep our heads and keep our standards and keep going, really. So, yeah, we all helped each other in that. We were quite a youngish side, all similar ages, and I think we pushed each other a little bit all the way.
Mm. Brilliant. Well, the big bad wolf, Wolverhampton Wanderers, they made an approach and you met Graham Turner at Molineux to discuss a move. Can you tell us about that experience? Because as far as I understand, there's a bit of a twist in the tale which involves a ripped bar mat and Dave Bassett.
Yeah, fantastic information, yeah. I think you've been listening to my after dinners.
Everywhere.
What happened with that is I had no agents then, no agents at all, no mobile phones or anything, and I wrote letters to every club. I'd had 4 years at Bury, wanted to move, and Wolves were dead keen. They came out of nowhere, wanted to pay £250,000 for me in 1990. And so they said, can you meet me at Great Bar Services? Graham Turner and Ron Duke, who was the late Ron Duke, who was the big chief scout there, and said, will you come down and meet us? So I said, yeah, no problem. I'll come down and meet you. So, like I said, no agents, naive Nick here from Sheffield went down. And we talked and, you know, I wanted to come to Wolves, we're doing this, and I'm like, wow, this is fantastic, this is what I want to do. And he said to me, what are you looking for? And I said, and I honestly had not got a clue, I'd not even gone with figures of money, I just wanted to better myself. He said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll write this down, and he ripped the bar mat off for me, and he said, right, this is what I wanted to offer. And he wrote these figures down and he pushed it back across to me. And like I say, naively, I picked it up and went, wow, that's unbelievable. And he'd offered me £650, £750 and £850 with a signing on fee for each year.
Wow.
And it was like, I mean, that then more or less trebled my wages, what I was on for the first year. And it was just unbelievable. I'm thinking, well, anyhow, I said to him, listen, I've got to ring Sam Ellis back at Bury because I said I would do when we talked, just to see if everything was all right. So I rung Sam, went, got me 10p out of my pocket, went into the payphone, rung up. So when the beeps went, got Sam Ellis on the phone and he said to me, well, how's it going? I said, yeah, brilliant. He went, well, another club's rung for you. And he said, I said, who? And he went, Dave Bassett, Sheffield United. I went, right, I'm on my way. And I put the phone down, went in to see Graham and said, listen, thank you very much. I need time to think about it. I'm off. And he went, right, we'll ring you tonight. I said, yeah, ring me tonight. I got in my car and drove straight to Sheffield United. Went in, said to Harry, he said, right, what are you looking for? So now I've learned. So I put £100 on each of my figures. Same signing on fee because I didn't bother about that. Harry went 5 minutes. He went in to see Dave Capper, the secretary, came back and went, right, we'll agree with that.
Fantastic.
And I signed within 5 minutes of going in. And to be fair, Sheffield United could have offered me £250 a week and I would have signed. It didn't matter because I was going on to play for Sheffield United, who just got into, which was the First Division, which obviously now was the Premier League. And it was just like unbelievable. And for about 3 weeks, I was the highest ever signing, £250,000, which was brilliant. But I was back home on a journey for 4 years.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. and to think, yeah. You know, and to think at the beginning, you're like, oh, you know, that's not the place I really want to start my career. But you're talking about the early stage of your career now, your mid-20s. And
yeah.
That's a fantastic story. When I read it, I was like, I've got to ask this. I've got to ask this.
Yeah.
Because the listeners are going
to
love
it. Yeah, it's all through 5 minutes. Five minutes it took to sign it. And the thing is, after it, Wolves rang me. I was going away on holiday the day after to Hong Kong. Actually, my wife then was a day student, so we got to Hong Kong and Dubai. And Wolves rang me all through the holiday, offering me more and more money, thousands. And I could have made a lot. And I said no. And it made me ill in the end. It spoiled me all because I'd signed for Sheffield United, and I didn't want to disappoint all, but I'd made my mind up, and I'd signed it for Sheffield United. That was it, and they were offering and offering and offering, and like I said, they could have kept offering for whatever. I was going back to my team who I supported all my life, back in the top flight, and it was like, I suppose, like your dream come true, your boyhood thing, really, what you read about, but it was happening to me, and I couldn't wait it to start.
Your wife must really love you for you to turn down that amount of money.
well, that's it. It didn't matter. Money was, well, when I say it's not, it's never been really my driving thing. I'd love to now. It's brilliant, isn't it, with all the money, but yeah. I was playing football, and that was the main thing, the highest thing I could do.
Of course, and you reach your dream, do you know what I mean? So.
And also at that time, that wasn't bad money, because I knew what people were, other people. And I weren't doing a job. I was doing what I love doing. So I'm getting paid decent money for it. So, I was the luckiest person alive, to be honest. Mm.
And put this, you went from playing the likes of Aldershot to making your debut for the club you supported as a kid against, like, Liverpool. We had the, Ian Rush, John Barnes. I mean, that dream come true is an understatement.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the funny thing is, we played Sheffield Wednesday in the Steel City Cup the week before, and I clashed shins with Colton Palmer, and it was killing me. But Harry picked the team, and I couldn't not say I weren't playing, but I got this unbelievable lump on my shin. Didn't say anything. And we played against Liverpool, which was like, wow, I'm playing against Liverpool. Like you say, those names. Red Hot, we lost 3-1. There were no sub-goalkeepers, and Simon Tracy broke his jaw after 15 minutes. John Pemberton went in goal. And it was just amazing. It was what a game, and the atmosphere. But I got done for the drugs test after, to do the drugs test. So like you say, season before, I'm playing against Aldershot, Newport, all these places. Next thing, I'm in this room trying to have a tiddle next to John Barnes, Ian Rush, and I can't remember which. And I'm like, wow, this is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But as it is, my shin blew up then, and it got poisonous. We played the next game, and it got poisonous, and they had to rush me into hospital to actually take an abscess out. But I was that desperate to play, I didn't tell anybody. And it put me back a couple of months, actually, at Sheffield United with that. But I was that desperate to make my debut and play that I'd got poisonous shin. And I've still got the hole in it now from where they dug it out. But to be fair, it were all worth it just to play, make my debut for Sheffield United against Liverpool.
That sounds pretty serious. Could you have lost your leg?
Yeah, I could, actually. They rushed me off against Derby at half-time. And the doc there rushed me straight to hospital to get it cut out, yeah.
Oh, blimey.
I know.
Easy, eh? Well, look, what was it like playing for Harry Bassett? Because I see a lot of him in Harry Redknapp kind of thing. Was he that kind of manager, the motivational?
Yeah. To be fair, thing with Harry was he was. I know this is going to sound, because a lot of people said we played like dog and dog, we played it long and all like that. He was a man so much above his time. It was untrue. We had video analysis. We had the fitness guys in then. We had the diets. Everything was unbelievable what we did. I mean, they're going about Wenger bringing stuff in. Harry did loads of stuff on the Italians and what they did. And to be fair, it gained us points as the season went on, because we were that fit. We did our weights. We did that. We knew technically we weren't as good as the teams at the top. Of course we weren't. But on the other side, it was. But he also had this thing about team spirit, and it was one for all for one for all, and you win it all together, and you do anything for your teammate, and it was unbelievable, and he loved it. And off the field, he didn't mind what you got up to. Well, I mean, to an extent, but your team spirit was there. Loved the lads having a drink and everything. But as soon as you walked into the football club ready to train, that was it. That was your job, and he was as professional as anybody. To be fair, I would have thought, like you say about Harry Redknapp, I've never played for Harry, I know people have. not the best coach in the world, but manager and get the best out of the players, fantastic. And that's what Harry Bassett was like. And I had my fallouts with him through the 4 years, but you do with every manager you do. But I had four fantastic years playing for him, and I've learned a lot actually for my coaching, for how he was and what he did, and how he was with people, and how he prepared things.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, tell us about the 92-93 season cup run, because I assume you must have a lot of good memories.
Yeah. I mean that was a fantastic one with the cup run and everything. Yeah. I mean, that was... I'd just come back from a cruise ship. I'd managed to get that. Brian Dean had just come back from... I think he'd had glandular fever, Dino. Mm-hmm. And we came back at the same time, just as the cup run got going. And we had a... You know, that was brilliant. Playing Burnley twice. Getting through the third round by the skin of his teeth. Just beating Hartlepool. And then we had Man United, which was a fantastic game. Blackpool in the quarterfinals, Blackburn in the quarterfinals on penalties. One which I never watched a penalty. I just faced the cop and went on their reaction. And obviously, unfortunately, losing to Wednesday in the semi-final. But that was a great season. A great season for us all. Yeah.
Well, you scored against United, didn't you? And that must be a big thing, scoring against Peter Schmeichel.
Well, I can tell my son now that it was handball. I mean, I should have scored with the initial balling from Glyn Hodges, which was a great ball. But when you see the massive Dane flying out at you, I did happen to take my eye off it a little bit. And the ball ricocheted up, and with my momentum, it did hit my forearm and went in. But my son always says that it was handball. And I said to him, no, it wasn't. But I can tell him now, yeah, it was handball. But there you go. He still says in the records books, 2-1, Giggs won for them, Hodges and Hoyland for Sheffield United. So it was a fantastic day at Bramall Lane, brilliant, and live on the BBC as well, which got you a little bit of recognition at the time as well. So yeah, brilliant.
I remember that, and I seem to remember a certain bet Alan Cork made about his beard.
Yes, well that's right. I mean, Corky was brilliant with his beard, because he'd scored against Hartlepool in the fourth round. And he just started this beard, and he said, right, I'm going to grow my beard until we get knocked out. So we all came in the day after, waiting for the cup draw, and it came out, and Sheffield United at home to Man United. And you just heard Corky go, yes, brilliant. And we're going, yes, brilliant. He went, no, I'll be able to get rid of my beard then, because we'll not beat them. And as it is, we beat them, and then... Unfortunately for Corky, we had Blackburn, and that went to a replay. So we had another few times with it. And then the semi-final got moved to Wembley in front of a live audience. So he's at Wembley, 75,000 there, looking like all Father Time, and scoring as well. So
right.
Serves him right for wanting us to go out against Man United. But after, I remember him in the big bath at Wembley. I mean, we were all devastated losing, and Corky's there shaving his beard off and saying, thank God for that, he can come off now.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, Jamie, fast forward 12 months, and it was an emotional end to the season as the Blades were relegated at Stamford Bridge. What do you remember about that day?
I remember being sub, warming up with my brother-in-law at the time, his brother-in-law now, Alan Kelly, and we were finding out all the results from people at the touchline and people saying to us, you're all right, don't worry. All the teams were losing, Everton were losing, Blackburn had scored in every match at home all season, they're playing Ipswich, it were nil-nil, they were going to score, not a problem, everything were going right for us, we were winning. And then suddenly, you know, it was 1-1, I got on, and the last kick of the game, I think it was Dennis Wise crossed it. I think Glenn Hoddle actually headed one on, flicked one on, and Mark Skeen scored at the far post.
Mm.
And at that time, we thought, well, all right, we've lost, but all the other results will be no problem. And we're coming off the pitch, and my brother-in-law came up to me, Alan Kelly, and just went, we're down. I said, we can't be down. We cannot be down. We can't be down. He said, we're down. We're down. He said, all the results have gone against us. And we got in. the dressing room at Stamford Bridge, and it filtered through that we were, and it was just unbelievable. The feeling, oh dear me. And go on, we couldn't get out of Stamford Bridge. They were playing in the cup final the week after, or a couple of weeks against Man U, and they were all there. And I remember Eric Cole, the agent, just going round and saying to some of our lads who were based on, it's Monster, they're terrible, Monster, terrible. And I just wanted to punch him and say, there's Monster for you. And a lot of the lads did come back with us because they were Southern based. So we got the coach, probably the quietest coach ever, going back to Sheffield. And as we pulled in the car park at Bramall Lane, there was hundreds of Sheffield United fans, and I thought, oh, we're going to get lynched here. We're going to get lynched. And as we got off the coach, they started singing and draping scarves round us and hugging us.
Wow.
And they were crying and we were crying. I've still got one of the scarves, actually, still.
Wow.
What a fan gave me that day, and it was just the most horrible feeling ever. Because I was one of them, I was a fan, and I was devastated as anybody. And whatever could have gone wrong that day went wrong, and sometimes the gods of football play that way, and unfortunately it knocked Sheffield United for years and years and years, that going out of the Premier League that day.
That's
and
right.
It took them a long time to get back, so I never really recovered that much from it. So yeah, sad day, but as they say, that's football sometimes.
Absolutely. Well, Jamie, aside from that cup run, what were your favourite moments at the club?
Favourite moments? So probably off the field. No, without doubt. There's a week what stands out. I think it was the 91-92 season when Sheffield Wednesday had come back into the First Division Premier League, as it is, and they were the first derby for 21 years in the top flight, and we obviously hadn't started the season well, like we never did, and Wednesday had all the stars. I mean, John Sheridan, Colin Palmer, Ersty, Chris Woods, Danny Wilson, Viv Anderson, all of them, Roland Nielsen, they had everybody, Big Nigel Pearson, they had everybody.
John Hart.
John Hart, all those, and it was like one of those where we're going to get hammered. And we'd heard in the week that Wednesday were taking bets how many they were going to be up by 20 minutes. So it kicked off, I think it was about 1 o'clock on a Sunday at Bramall Lane, and I've never known anything like it. The atmosphere was electric. We had four lads. It was me, Mitch Ward, Dane Whitehouse, Carl Bradshaw, Sheffield lads, Sheffield United fans playing against Wednesday. And the first tackle went in, and there was a wall then. Everybody was round. And I remember looking at Roland Nielsen and him just looking as if to say, what am I involved in here? This is scary. And we reacted to everything. And we were threatening everybody. And Big Colton wanted to scrap. And Ersty wanted to scrap. And eventually, we ruled his luck a little bit, got in the game, and we would beat them 2-0. And it was just unbelievable. And I've still got a picture now. Before I came to the pitch, the fans had gone, because I celebrated forever. I turned, and there's a scoreboard in the back, and it says United 2, Wednesday 0. And I'm stood with my arms clenched above it, beating them. And that was unbelievable. And we went out that night in Sheffield, and the fans were just like, oh. I remember a Rottweiler dancing on the pool table in the big tribute seats in Sheffield with a Sheffield United scarf around it. And everything, for that week, I must admit, we drove and drove it down. Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night.
Wow.
Drinking. It was just celebration. The only problem is, we had Tottenham at White Hart Lane on the Saturday. And it was like, wow, they had Lineker, Gordon Jury, all these Mabbitt, everybody. And we went down there and beat them 1-0. And it was just unbelievable.
Wow.
Just the week to beat Sheffield Wednesday at Bramall Lane and then to go down and beat Tottenham 1-0 on their own patch was just fantastic. And that week will go down as one of my best in football. It was just, for the whole football, the 90 minutes of each game, but the whole thing what went with it and the fans, the how happy they were was just brilliant. And like I say, knowing him, my dad had a pub then, quarter of a mile from Bramall Lane as well.
Wow.
So it was just brilliant at that time, yeah, great.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, your next club was Burnley, I believe, and I think you played under Chris Waddle there. Did that feel a little strange, given he was a Wednesday legend?
Yeah, Chris was strange. He came in and he didn't really enamour himself to the senior players. He wanted us all out. I mean, he'll put his hand up now. Chris, what a player. Absolutely fantastic player. One of the best I've ever played against. But as a manager, it wasn't for him. It wasn't for him, and it never worked. It wasn't the club for him as well, Burnley. You have to be a special sort of manager to come there. And we survived the last match of the season. We beat Plymouth at home 2-1 to stay up. So, you know, for Chris, it wasn't good. Yeah, I didn't get on with him very well at all. And he knows that. But we're friends again now. If I lives near my brother now in Sheffield, and my brother still gives him stick about it, but and I do want to see him. But I've done some media work, and I bumped into when he's doing Radio 5, and we have a good chat and everything. So, but I think he knew after a year, football manager is not for Chris at all. He's quite a shy person, to be fair, and speaking in front of groups and doing stuff. And to come when you've played for Marseille and Wednesday and Tottenham, to come down to Burnley, who were then in Division 1 with not the best calibre of players, some lads, it was difficult for him. When he's describing runs that Papin had done at Marseille to lads playing in First Division, it never really clicked.
Okay. Well, after Burnley came an eventful spell at Scarborough, and I say eventful because I know you feel it was a big mistake going there. What was that about?
Well, I was actually going to sign for Shrewsbury Town. Jake King had said, come down and play for me, you know, and Jake had been after me for a little bit when I was at Burnley. He knew my ex-manager at Burnley, Jimmy Mullen, really well, and I was on my way there to sign, and Mick Wadsworth rung me and said, oh, come to Scarborough, we'll give you 2 years and you can be player coach. And I'd always wanted to go to the coaching, and I thought, yeah, brilliant, that's right for me. So I went up to Scarborough, went in as player coach and never did a day's coaching in my life. It was all Mick, and it was just a nightmare of a club. We didn't get paid our wages for months on time. I'd come from four fantastic clubs, City, Bury, Burnley, Sheffield United, where everything was done right, and here it was just an absolute nightmare. And they weren't paying you wages, they weren't doing all sorts, and they were shipping players out right, left and centre, and it was just the biggest mistake I'd ever made in my life. And unfortunately, again, we went down the last match of the season there when Jimmy Glass scored for Carlisle and kept them up. But unfortunately for me, at 33, it made my mind up then. I'd fallen out of love of playing football because I didn't enjoy playing for Mick, and I didn't enjoy the environment of, you know, some clubs where things weren't done properly. And I just thought, right, time to make a break now. I'm not. Once I didn't enjoy training, and I didn't enjoy taking part in that, that was for me to finish. Right. And Scarborough just did it for me, and I thought, right, time to do something new now.
Yeah.
And I look back on it now, probably at 33, I should have gone on. I should have played on. They'd actually knocked my passion out of football, which I never thought I'd lose. But a few people had said, once you lose your passion for it, that's it. You've lost a bit of percentage. Don't go non-league. I had a lot of offers to go non-league, and I knew I wouldn't be able to give it 100% and I'd be getting good money, but actually frauding people, and I didn't want to do that. So it was time to come away from it.
And then you actually entered the what I like to call the weird and wacky world of management. I know you became Paul Simpson's assistant at Rochdale because you coached the youth side for a bit.
Yep.
And then you went to caretaker manager with David Unsworth at Preston. Was it difficult? Was it a difficult transition to make from player to management?
No, not really. Because even when I played, because I didn't have much pace, and I played, I coached. I told people what to do.
Right.
And I think because I played for Harry at Sheffield United, I'd always been captain at places and PFA rep. So I liked getting a group of players together. And you know, having that bond and you know, pulling a team together. So the coaching side and the management, and the little bit of managing, it was not a problem. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed working with people's characters and the football ability. I always used to say that you've all got that. That's not a problem, or else you'll be footballers. It's the other side of it. Mm. And I enjoyed that with players. And, you know, there's ways of getting respect from your coaching side. And I think I got that, I think, as I did with the coaching. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm. And you coached at Sheffield United's under-18s for a year. Is that right?
I did. Well, 6 months. Because I went back, and that was the worst mistake coaching wise I ever did. Because I went back to Sheffield United thinking he's going to be the club it was as a player, and it wasn't. It had changed so much. There was a conflict between the first team and the academy. I got on with the first team, Danny Mason, Chris Morgan, Billy Dearden, fantastic people, Frank Barlow, Darren Ward, goalkeeper, really good people, but the academy resented them, didn't get on with them, and I couldn't understand that. There was not many people who played football in the academy. They were all what I'd call community coaches, school graduates, college graduates, and didn't understand what actually the main team is, the first team. They're the ones who keep everybody in a job. And from day one, from 2 weeks in, I could have resigned then, but as it was, 6 months into it, I was travelling over on the snake path every day, and I thought, no, that was another one. I'd enjoyed my coaching for about 14 years, and I loved my coaching, but I didn't like the political side of it, and decided time to move on again.
Which is, as we said at the top of the show, a lot of people are doing at the moment now. So, as far as I'm aware, you became a football summariser for the BBC Radio, for BBC Radio Lancashire, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. I'd got into the football summarising and really enjoyed it. I'm watching football, talking about it, having an opinion, probably because I'm a Yorkshireman. I think that helped. And not only, obviously I covered Burnley, who I played for, but Preston, Blackburn. I mean, the seven teams for Radio Lancashire, and I really, really enjoyed it. And from that, they asked me if I'd like to do my own radio show. And so I said, well, what do you mean, my own radio show? If anybody ever says to me, how are you, Jane Eyre? I said, marvellous. Because I always think, yeah, I am. I'm marvellous. I'm alive. I love my job. And so they called it Jamie Hoyland's Marvellous Special.
Excellent.
And so I said, well, who do you want me to interview? Footballers. He went, no. Footballers, anybody. And I finished up interviewing Jim Bowen from Pulse Eye,
right.
Steve Norman, the Spandau Ballet saxophone player, a military policeman, journalists, an HGV driver on the ground, all these people. And my opening gambit, I didn't have a script, he said, so what's the most marvellous thing you've ever done in your life? And away you went, and that was it. And it was just brilliant. And I did, I think, 38 shows, I did that every week, as well as me summarising and me scouting for England. And it was brilliant. And then, fortunately for the listeners, I got a full-time job and I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, I know you're the head of recruitment for Everton's under-23s, who, if I'm not mistaken, they won the league last season. Now, forgive me for my naivety, but are you involved in transfers for young players? What does the job actually entail?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, going right back to Man City, and, you know, you had your first team, reserves, youth team, and they'd all mingle in and everything together. Now, there's an academy, which has their own bit, there's the first team, and then under-23s. So, obviously, the first team buy the players ready to go into the first team, but now there's like an area where you're looking at players to come into that 23s. I'm looking at players probably between 17 and 20-year-olds to come into Dave Unsworth's squad it might take them 6 months, it might take them 2 years, but to progress for the next stage, to get into to Ronald's squad and into the first team. So I'm looking for potential who can, not to play in our 23s, but to play in Everton's first team eventually.
Right.
I go to under 23 matches, under 18s, first team games. So it's like your own little football club.
Right, okay.
The academy wants to do that. They recruit from the locals and everything. But the under 23s, because of the age I'm looking at, they could be at clubs already. or playing in Europe.
Okay.
So it's usually entails a transfer fee. Like Dominic Calvert-Lewin cost us initially $450,000 down payment from Sheffield United last September. So it's looking at the talent, what's up and coming to get into the football club.
Right, okay, fantastic, okay,
yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic job, it's brilliant. And I've got to say, I mean, even though Everton sent us down at Sheffield United as a football club, and Dave Unsworth, I've worked with Unsy, he sent Sheffield United down when he played for Wigan as well.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
Now we've got a bit of history being Unsy, but it's fantastic. Everton Football Club is just they do call it the people's club, and I can understand why they do that now, because wow, how it is around Liverpool and the community projects they do. But like I said, it goes back, there's no egos, it's a real family club and a real one where everybody wants everybody to do well at the football club. And it has that feeling when you go there and you can't wait to go into the building and see people and get working. Even though a lot of the time I'm out at matches and doing stuff, but yeah, it's a real, real positive place to work.
Brilliant, brilliant, fantastic. Well, Jamie, I've been told the likes of Kieran Dow, Basala Sambu, Liam Walsh and Harry Charlesy are ones to look out for. Who would you say are the standout players, or is that a little unfair to say?
They are all good players. I mean, they did terrific last season to win the league. They should have no chance of winning it, with your Cities, your Chelsea's. But there's a little bit of teamwork in there. I mean, there is one who's playing in the World Cup at the moment, who was under the radar a little bit, and that's who was captain of 23, Jonjo Kenny, a right-back. And, I mean, I've been watching Jonjo play out in Korea, where the humidity must be unbelievable. And he never stops up and down the right-hand side, and he loves defending as well. And so hopefully Jonjo will be around it as well. But, I mean, obviously, he's had a role who we took from Charlton, who's, coming into his own now. And Dom Lewin, who's broke into it, and Tom Davies, who were all integral parts early on in the season, under 23s. And I must admit, with Ronald, if you're good enough, you're old enough, and you don't mind giving him a chance, which is a brilliant thing and a brilliant tool for me to work when I'm looking to, bring players and say, come and look at what you can have at Everton. If you do it, you've got a chance of playing, because he wants good young players.
Is there a criteria then? Because I assume, height, size, technical ability, pace, all
no,
that.
Not really. No. It's funny because when I used to coach at Preston, people used to say to me, what you're looking for as a player, you were big, strong, you must be, I said, a footballer.
Right.
I said, what do you mean? So a footballer. I said, and obviously that was a different level at Preston, and I was, that's all I was looking for, and then I tried to mould them in. At Everton, they've got to come as a footballer. To be at a Premier League club, that's a gimme. They've got to be really good footballers. Then the rest of it, there's pace in the game. The high thing, I mean, we've got Liam Walsh in our midfield, who's an unbelievable little midfield player. What a tenacious one is. And if you look at him, you think, no chance. He's like a Scholesy, size of him and everything. So a lot of it as well is attitude. When you look at a player, it's that attitude he's got to his teammates, to himself, to the whole game. Because, like I say, a gimme is that he should be able to play football. That's, you'll be looking at him if he can't play. But his whole attitude and way he is. Because if he's got that attitude, that's going to take him a long way as well. And that's one of the major criteria that I certainly look at, and I know the lads look at as well. Because he has to come into a special environment, especially working with Unsy, because he doesn't half make him work hard. But he pushes them for the right reasons, because he wants them all to be Everton first team players. And you've got to have the right makeup to do that. And he tries to get every ounce of them to do that.
Fantastic. What about approaching these players then? Because I know a certain club across the road from you guys got a little bit of trouble. What's the method of approaching these players?
Well, it's the one where, we are good. Robert Elston, our chief executive, got Steve Walsh as head of football. Really good people. And, you know, we do our due diligence, we find out about them, we watch them, and then when we can, we'll look at approach to the club, and so if we want to buy somebody, an official thing goes in from the club. The club solicitor will check it all out, and it goes in, and that's what we'd like to pay for them. And then if the clubs agree, then you can start talking to the players. But obviously, like you say, it's very tight now, and yeah, like you say, the club not too far away from us has, you know, had a bit of a nightmare this week. But you know, we try and do it through the front door the right way, and try and get the players through that. But yeah, I mean, all the due diligence goes off before it on checking the players and making sure they're up to scratch, and then try and do it that way.
So what, a solicitor just passes a letter to the club or a fax or something?
Yeah, well, yeah, an email through Robert, probably the chief executive, whatever club you're going for, right, or director of football, and say, you know, we'd like to make this offer for this club, for this player. And then the club will say yes or no, or no, he's not available, he's not up for selling, and that's it, really. Yeah. So, which you can understand. Yeah. I mean, we're after the best young players in the country, and clubs who have them don't want to sell them, which I fully understand, really, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I remember the David De Gea saga last season with a fax machine breaking down. I'm thinking,
yeah,
2016,
yeah,
right. 17,
yeah. You know. Yeah, well, that's not me, no. I don't know if they do, I don't know if fax, I don't know what they do now, I don't know if that's been delayed by having emails now, what you can do, yeah. But they all have to be signed, you see, everything has to be signed, so yeah, that's probably why it went through fax.
Great stuff. Well, on a final note, I want to take you back 5 years to the time when you cycled near enough 1,000 miles from Land's End to Donal Groats to raise money for Gary Parkinson, who I believe is a former player who's suffering from lock-in syndrome. Now, that's a gruelling task, but a rewarding one as well. What did you make of the whole experience?
Right, well, that's, I mean, like I said, I played the party, and I had the phone call that he collapsed and he got lock-in syndrome, and it affected a lot of us because he was youth coach at Blackpool, I was at Preston then, and you know, it's one of those things, what can you do? And I just wanted to raise some money. I knew him personally, and I thought, I'm not swimming the channel, I can't do that, no chance. I'd run a marathon in 2005 because I wanted to do that before I was 40, before my knees actually packed in. So I'd done that, I did what else, and I thought, right, a bike. And I'd never really been, I didn't even own a bike. And I thought, I want to do Land's End to Donal Groats, that's the one, I'll do that. And I put it out there to a few people, and the next thing, I got phone calls from a lot of people at Burnley Football Club who had done them before, on the, not the players, but people who work behind the scenes. I'd called Chris Gibson there and said, right, I'll set it up, I'll do all the logistics, we'll do it in 9 days. I went, 9 days? He went, yeah, well, that's over 100 mile a day, we'll get cracking with it. And it was the most, it was the best ever to do it with 10 lads. The worst weather all week, but it was just brilliant. It was just because we all knew what we were doing it for, and you know, to cycle that amount at the time, 100 miles a day at least, and then get to Donal Groats and cycle in. And on one particular day, we got sent back near Dumbarton, other side of Glasgow. We couldn't do it. We had headwinds, and everybody were packing in. Bunches, and so that day we only did 80 miles, and the minibus packed us in, all in, took us to the hotel. And when I got to the hotel, I said, I can't do this. I said, tomorrow morning, I want you to the minibus driver. I said, I want you to take me back where we finished, and I'm going to do 140 miles tomorrow because I want to do it. And two of the other lads said, I'll do it with you. And I finished up, they said, right, you're Capitano now, you've took over it. And so when we got to, I did it, and it was brilliant. That day was lovely weather, and we went, I remember cycling through Glasgow about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was beautiful, and got up to dump, finished it up at Spey, and it was just brilliant. We'd done it, and I knew then I could do anything, because I'd done 140. When we got to Donal Groats, we stopped just as we were going in, and they said to me, right, you lead us in. Your idea, you captain. And I must admit, I rode into Donal Groats with a little bit, I must have got a bit of gritty BI. Because a little tear came down, because what we were doing it for, and it was just like the old football days again, where we'd all pull together and pull through it. And I think we raised about $25,000 on the cycle. That's and amazing. It was a fantastic thing to do. And, you know, such a sad thing with Gary. And he's still in the same situation. And we see him every now and again. And, you know, it's just one of those things. A footballer, a 44 ex-footballer, gets that. And for the grace of God, it could be any of us. And, you know, it was a great thing to do, to raise it for him more than anything for us. So, yeah, I think which I'm very proud of doing it. And I'm so glad I did.
It's fantastic. Now, the thing is, they're still taking donations anyway. So if anyone wants to donate, there's the Gary Parkinson Trust Fund. It's garyparky.co.uk/donate.
Yes, yeah, they are. And they still do dinners and they still do all sorts of stuff for him to keep it going. So, yeah, I think the PFA have been very good with him as well. So, yeah, I mean, Gary was a very, very good footballer. Unfortunately, didn't play, you know, when it was right up there, but that's it. And sometimes everybody just has to club together and you know, help people out when it becomes like that.
Absolutely. Well, Jamie, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. I really cannot thank you enough. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoy talking to you about your career. You're on Twitter, aren't you?
I am, yes, at Hoyland Jamie, yes.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, Jamie, again, thank you very much for your time, mate.
No, it's been absolutely brilliant. I hope I haven't bored you too much.
No, not at all.
But it's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed that. Some of that stuff, what you found out about me, they're the first questions ever in my life I've been asked about them. So they are brilliant. That's fantastic research.
Thank you very much. Well, Jamie, look, the door's always open if you fancy coming back on the show. We do review shows every week, so you're more than welcome to come back.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Thank you very much.
Great. Jamie, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. You have a good evening, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very
Keep
much.
Keep in touch. Cheers, mate. All the best. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, that was Jamie Hoyland. I knew you'd like it, but yeah, it was an absolute pleasure having Jamie on. He's a fantastic gent, really knows his stuff, and I look forward to having him back on the show. Now, before we go, I'd just like to say a quick thanks to our partners. The FNX Network, at FNX Network, you can follow them on Twitter. Also, My Sportswear, give them a follow, at My Sportswear 1. Tune into Sofa Sports News. They're another great football show hosted by Harry and the lads. They're available on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes and YouTube. Nick Tanner Events, The Offside Trust, Lucky 7 Management, Inspire Me Creations. And don't forget the Football Weekly Show, which is being launched on Sky Channel 23 on the 4th of September. We'll be there, and I hope you guys tune in. Until next time, take care.